13, you've heard a lot about that.
So you were at TID when you started?
On shift. The mission plan was getting adventurous. They wanted to do experiments with the instrumentation unit, which was a part of the launch rocket. They had this plan. They were going to do tests with the IU, and they were going to do RF experiments, and that meant powering it up. And it powered up, of course, the plan always was that it was on the lunar module frequency. And John Mitchell is a good one to talk you for you to talk to about this. But when the service module went bang, they then decided to use the LEM as the lifeboat. They had to power up the LEM. That meant these two downlinks were almost on the same frequency. And it was a real bother. And John Mitchell advised the ops team to pull the IU off to one side and pull the LEM off to the other side. And that was the right tactic to do.
Mm-hmm.
But in that process, Houston required to get, you know, a big dish up, and they wanted Parks.
Yeah.
And, you know, Tom Reed may have talked to you about the negotiations that went on with the CSIRO. But all that happened that I knew of was that, look, we're going to have to get Parks up. You guys that went up there last time, I want you to fly up there. I think he put it through the chief engineer, Bob Cudmore. But, you know, we have to get up there pronto. I can remember, I think I went home and I got some clothes. I must have, but I didn't have time to change much. We had to be out at Canberra Airport, you know, in the space of an hour or something like that, hour and a half, because it used to take an hour to get into town. But I know that I turned up at Parks with Jack Dickinson. I really am scratching to think who the data operator was.
And Harry Westwood was there too, wasn't he?
Harry Westwood was on the recorders, yep. But there was a data DMOD guy, and I really can't say 100% that's either Peter Stewart or Ted Wilcox. I can't pick who it was, and I can't remember looking at the pictures. But anyway, when I look at the picture that John Sarkisian has sent of me at Parks, we've just got there. We're trying to work out predictions, trying to work out frequencies. I'm still in my suit and whatever because I used to go to work in a suit for Apollo. I used to go to work in a suit for every mission as an ops supervisor. My suit coat is folded over the top of the DSN type intercom, the TIC as it was called, and I'm leaning over that trying to work out predictions. I know that was what was going on. So it was a real scramble. Anyhow, I do remember there was something or other that we had which we couldn't get out. I can remember saying, I've got the bloody thing in my hand, but we can't get it to him. I don't know whether it was voice or data.
Right, yeah.
Now,
when you flew up, did you fly to Parks Airstrip?
We flew to Parks Airstrip, from what I recall.
And just drove up.
It was dark. Yeah. We landed in darkness. And we, as I told Hamish, we were in this little plane that had a prop in the front and a prop at the back.
So you were in there and...
we were in there. John Bolton had got all of the Apollo front end installed for us. They were trying to get predictions. You know, when you're pointing a dish that's got a beam width of 0.1 of a degree, you've got to be right on it or you've missed it completely. And so John had done an excellent job. They were ready for us. We acquired the lunar module pretty soon, And as I say, I don't know what it was that I had, but I had a cable in my hand, and I said, we've got the bloody stuff here. We can't get them to it. Get it to them.
Mm.
So.
And that was the first day or so, I guess, was it? You were getting telemetry and voice.
Yeah. Well, it was, you know, perhaps, I don't know, a couple of hours worth of data that we gave them before, you know, it might have been 4 hours, I don't recall, of data that we got them before, you know, the spacecraft set. And then we had to organise ourselves down for sleeping accommodation down in the astronomer's emergency area.
Mm-hmm.
And to be able to get ourselves up in time for the expected pass next day. And I was like an SB3, I suppose. It's a, you know, the USB supervisor at Parks. And I was intercomming to John Saxon as the Ops 1 position. And I had to do the teletype information in and out. And so, yeah, I was an Ops supervisor there, and the interface with the CSIRO.
And the Parks guys, they were driving the dish? What, Fox
they
Mason
were driving
or somebody?
The dish.
Do you remember who was doing that? Or?
I don't. The structure of the pedestal meant that you couldn't always see.
They were on the other side.
Yeah. And you never really got a chance to get off your own position because it was full on. Yeah. So I did take a photograph of the team for Apollo 12, but when I took it, of course, I didn't put myself in it because I was taking the photograph.
Yes.
So I didn't get one of Apollo 13, unfortunately.
Mm. Nobody got any pictures of Apollo 13 that I can tell. Everybody was too busy.
Oh, it was just, well, it was just full on. Really great to look back on, but when, of course, you see the film of the dish, you've just got to discount everything factual. Yeah, so, you know, that was 13, a great success for mankind, I guess.
I was just reading in the technical report from Apollo 13 that because of Parks, they were able to get about 20% more data back from the spacecraft. So
yeah, well, they were able to up the data rates, which is exactly what that report is saying. And, yeah, we were very proud of our achievement, and the CSIRO should equally be very proud of their achievement on that because, as I said, just pointing the dish at the spacecraft is a mammoth thing.